Hello, folks. Welcome to the November 6, 2010 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at WFT.org. Views and opinions expressed during this hour program and those of the speaker and do not reflect the views and opinions of WFT's management, board of directors. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice of labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us, and later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's brand new poem for this week, first here live on the Illinois World Labor Hour, is entitled, What Exactly Will They Do? Also here today with us today is Bob Plesney, our co-host and technical advisor, as well as Bill Gorell, one of the original founders of the Illinois Labor Hour, who will have some news and banner for us and commentary, I'm sure, as well. Now here's Tom to kick off this week's workers' interest news.
Thousands are still suffering from a summer of lost revenue after British Petroleum's April 20th well blowout off the Louisiana coast spewed more than 170 million gallons of crude oil into the sea. Fishermen who weren't working for BP's cleanup sat idle at the docks with no seafood to sell, while beachside restaurants found themselves with many fewer patrons, and hotels were nearly empty during a time when many are depending on much higher seasonal revenues to carry them through the slow winter months. And a lot of folks are complaining. The claims denied by British Petroleum for Gulf of Mexico oil spill victims are rising dramatically in number because of a flood of new filings coming in without proper documentation. Some 20,000 people have been told by BP that they have no right to emergency compensation. This since October 1st, compared with about 125 denials by the end of September. And that was besides many others who say they are getting mere fractions of what they've lost, while others are receiving large checks checks and full payments. The Justice Department last week announced the first criminal charges filed in an oil spill-related case against a woman who pretended to be employed by a New Orleans oyster company. She is now charged with wire fraud and faces up to 20 years in prison after authorities say she filed for $15,500 in fictional lost wages. According to BP claims administrator Kenneth Feinberg, the company has sent a number of potentially fraudulent claims to the Justice Department for investigation, and hundreds more are presently under review.
Okay, here's a story out of Labor Notes. The flight attendants lose at Delta Airlines. Delta flight attendants in New York gathered in disbelief on Wednesday to hear the bad news about their month-long union election. "Don't slit your wrists, but we lost," announced flight attendant Matthew Brown, reading from his phone as the returns were released by the National Mediation Board in Washington, D.C. The vote was 9,216 for representation to 9,544 against, a 328 vote margin. Slightly fewer than 20,000 flight attendants were eligible to vote. Of those, about 7,000 were members of the Association of Flight Attendants, AFA-CWA, at Northwest Airlines before the airline was merged into Delta in 2008. They had retained their previous contract after the merger took effect but stood to lose if the union was voted down. "As of midnight, our contract is null and void," said a New York-based flight attendant who'd worked for Northwest. Northwest attendants worried aloud that their new status as at-will employees will mean firings for the most outspoken workers. "They'll pick us off one by one," said an angry activist. Managers at the former Northwest hub in Minneapolis told flight attendants to take off their AFA pins. Brian Terrell, who worked for Northwest for 30 years, described the results as frightening. "This is the end of an era of job protection for us." Northwest flight attendants had been unionized for 63 years. And union supporters expressed disbelief at the reported election turnout. Of 19,887 flight attendants eligible to vote, 18,760 did so, which is a turnout of 94%, which seems really high. AFA charges that Delta managers urged flight attendants to vote from their work computers in their staff rooms, meaning that votes could be tracked by the employer. The union also charged that its supporters were intimidated. Valdez thought the higher vote turnout was a product of management's fear-based campaign. The union estimates Delta spent about $40 million to fend off AFA. Delta managers put forth a wall-to-wall anti-union message, Valdez said, calling you at home, pulling you aside at work. Piles of glossy mailers with misquotes and misinformation filled up mailboxes. Delta CEO Richard Anderson played up a culture clash between Northwest's northern base and Delta's southern workforce, attacking AFA in one company meeting, calling for unchristian and immoral. A DVD of the meeting was sent to every flight attendant, Valdez said. Patricia Friend, AFA's president, said the union will submit interference charges against Delta management for its illegal and unfair methods to sway the vote. The National Mediation Board can order a revote if it finds there was interference.
Man, I'd hope so. There's definitely some violations there, big time.
Yep.
Okay, I got a story here. Looks like France's unions voted on October 9th to end the strike at all oil refineries and at ports where workers have been protesting the government plan to raise the retirement age to 62. The CFDT union said that workers at least four refineries are still on strike here, voted return to their jobs. At one point, all 12 of the nation's oil refineries were shut down. Meanwhile, the CGT union said that striking dock workers at Marseille's oil terminals also voted on the same day to end their protest movement. The strike had blocked the port for weeks, leaving around 80 ships stranded at sea. The votes in weeks of protests about the government plan to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62. On October 27th, a few days earlier, the French National Assembly voted 336 to 233 in favor of the change in the pension law. A day earlier, the French Senate approved a vote by 177 to 151. French Finance Minister Christine Lagarde had estimated that the strikes were costing the country $565 million a day. And just an update on this, even though the oil refinery workers, the dock workers, voted to end their strikes, there are going to be more coming soon. There's already plans for a possible nationwide general strike.
The Chrysler Corporation announced on Thursday it will invest $660 million in its Belvidere, Illinois assembly plant to build new cars starting in 2012. The investment won't create any new jobs at this point in time, but Chrysler will retain the 2,349 jobs currently at the assembly plant, as well as a nearby parts stamping plant. Work actually began last summer on a new 638,000-square-foot body shop, where body side panels, fenders, and other parts are welded together, and the facility will have new machinery provided by Chrysler. Company spokesman Jody Tenson would not say what new vehicle the plant will build, but it's likely to be a replacement for the factory's current products, which are the Dodge Caliber and the Jeep Compass and Patriot compact sports utility vehicles. The Belvidere complex is about 70 miles northwest of Chicago along Interstate 90 near the Wisconsin-Illinois border. The factories, which have been around and in operation since 1965, have built past models such as the Town & Country Station Wagon and Neon and Omni compacts. Chrysler reported that with the Belvidere expansion, it has invested some $2.1 billion in its U.S. facilities since leaving bankruptcy protection in June of 2009.
Okay, Dave, I got a story here out of In These Times, and it's titled Poison Apple, iPhone Production Line Tied to Toxics in China. Anti-sweatshop activists have blasted Apple for ignoring exploitive, perhaps severely poisonous working conditions at United Wind Technology, a facility in Jiangsu Province, apparently connected to Apple computers. Media reports have been circulating since 2009 about exposure of workers to N-hexane, a substance workers say they've used to make those glittering Apple touchscreens. Public scrutiny intensified following a major strike over pay cuts in January. Around the same time, occupational safety authorities announced that dozens of employees had shown symptoms of N-hexane poisoning and been hospitalized. Hong Kong-based Students and Scholars Against Corporate Misbehavior, SACOM, launched a campaign to call out the digital mogul for its silence on these workplace hazards. SACOM recently published its independent research on working conditions behind Apple's product line. While not a formal health study, the investigation reveals a workplace environment rife with potential hazards for which no one seems to take responsibility. Workers say WinTech opened the emergency doors in departments to dilute the density of chemicals before inspections by local authorities took place. Workers are also denied the right to rest. The normal working hours in the factory is up to 70 hours per week, and there's no day off during the week. This is in violation of local laws and the codes of conduct of Apple and the Electronic Industrial Citizenship Coalition. Workers also express that they will be scolded if they lodge a complaint, and they do not find that there is an effective channel to bring about their grievances. Young workers who SACOM recently interviewed at Yung Wang, another Chinese facility tied to Apple, told investigators that workers used N-hexane to clean the Apple logos. They reportedly had no protective gear despite strong and irritating chemical orders, not to mention a legal requirement for protective equipment. Observers documented an absence of ventilation facilities on the closed shop floor. WinTech has provided some compensation to injured workers, but for the most part, the right to know doesn't exist in southern China. Workers do not know the composition of the solvent they are using, and the usage of N-hexane was requested by Certec because the chemical is more effective, according to the workers. One worker said, "If I knew the chemical was poisonous, I would have never worked in this factory."
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go on to a little workers' independent news, and we'll be also listening to some Hightower Radio, and we'll be back with Tom Thomas's Poem of the Week.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Think about this. The bottom 50 million workers, that's one in three workers in America. You know what their average pay is? $6,000.
The real picture of what's happening to American workers, their wages, their jobs, and their future prospects is frightening. And according to author and financial columnist David K. Johnston, the damage done is caused by tax, economic, and trade policies that are systematically dismantling the working and middle classes in America. Johnston says data from the Social Security Administration shows that from 1950 through 1980, income for the majority of workers at the base of our economy grew faster than any other segment. But when the Reagan Revolution and later George W. Bush cut taxes for the wealthy, worker wages took a dive. If Reagan's policies had not been adopted, Johnston says, it would mean $20,000 a year more in your pocket?
The average wage in this country would be $20,000 a year higher. People would have $400 a week more income on average if we'd continued the policies we previously had and all else had been equal.
Johnston says a reversal of the Reagan and Bush tax and economic policies would be a very good thing for jobs creation and worker wages.
When we had high taxes, we had economic growth. When we had high taxes, we had higher wages. When we had high taxes, we had more jobs and job growth. And we need to recognize that we've been sold a bill of goods here that is discouraging economic growth, discouraging the growing number of jobs at home, is literally subsidizing manufacturers to move jobs out of America and send them to China.
Yesterday, we looked at how the makeup of the Democratic Party in the House has shifted from moderate and conservative to much more progressive. Today, we look at two of the issues that may have heralded that shift. Jesse Russell has this report.
It may be a coincidence, but a number of Democrats in the House who sided with Republicans to vote against extending unemployment benefits and against the health care legislation are about to start looking for new jobs of their own. When it comes to the emergency unemployment extension, 16 House Democrats voted against that extension. Of those 16, two retired, and only three went on to win re-election. Although Illinois' Melissa Bean is still waiting for all of the results to be tallied in what is a very tight race, she was down by more than 500 Thursday afternoon. If she does lose, it'll make 11 Democrats who voted against unemployment losing their seats. As for the final health care bill, 34 Democrats voted against it, of which only 13 survived Election Day. North Carolina Representative Heath Shuler is the only Democrat to vote against both the emergency unemployment and health care to survive his re-election.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
A recent New York Times headline used the word soft to describe today's economy. On what planet does that wordsmith live? Soft implies cushions and comfort, while the economic reality that most Americans are experiencing is one of unrelenting hard times. Indeed, the content of the Times article defied its own headline, reporting that national economic growth this summer was pathetically weak. Tens of millions of people remain unemployed or underemployed, with millions of them having been mired in joblessness for nearly 2 years. Even those with jobs have seen their hours cut or wages slashed, so the nation's income growth was an abysmal 0.5%, and the bulk of that went to the richest Americans who enjoyed a nice rise in their stock portfolios. The way out of this, say a flock of economic gurus roosting on their lofty theoretical perches, is for consumers to spend more. Yoo-hoo, wise ones, spend what? The Times conceded that, with incomes of the masses plummeting, consumer demand remains flaccid, yet another word for soft. As noted by James K. Galbraith, a down-to-earth economist grounded in reality, the problematic factor is that consumers remain fundamentally insolvent. Still, reaching for a silver lining in a dark and stormy cloud, the Times noted that American families are at least shedding some of their consumer debt. Good! Except that much of this is the result of millions of hard-hit families having to default on their credit card bills, student loans, mortgages, and other debts they can no longer pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, the only thing soft in today's economy are the heads of the economists who keep blaming consumers, rather than fingering the big bankers and corporate CEOs who continue to knock down America's wages, the middle class, and America itself.
Okay, we come now to that portion of the program with a cultural corner and Thomas's brand new poem of the week. What exactly will they do?
Another election is done. A new crop of gangsters is in. Now we just have to wait and see if anyone deserved to win. Not one has said what they will do to restore America's dream. They wasted all their TV time when each other they had to ream. Their juvenile propensities when striving for the highest prize showed that each one who won a seat should now be brought back down to size. Just what exactly will they do to give all homeless folks a home? Where are the jobs we need to have so the roads we don't need to roam? Whether we're nearing a sunrise is something only time can tell. But how much time must people wait before before a nation's ills are well. Will the new kids in our Congress put our nation back on its road to all the dreams that we have had since we established our abode? Will they stop illegal wars and give back Social Security and build the road to join the shores of truth and sensibility? Or will our government just stay the mess it's been for so long? All we can do is wait and see and hope that they don't treat us wrong. What exactly will they do was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on November 3, 2010 and was first recited live November 6, 2010 here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Some public service announcements here. Peace demonstration now, more than ever. We need the voice of peace to be strong and present. This Saturday, November 6, 2010, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the corner of Main and Neal Street in downtown Champaign. And we plan to have a flyer about GI resistance. You can turn out and show your opposition to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq by showing up at the corner of Main and Neal today from 2 to 4 p.m. at the downtown Champaign. This is brought to you monthly by AWARE. Labor's Worldview, this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6, with host Jim Iman and yours truly. And we're going to be having some good programs coming up here on Labor's Worldview in the future. And within the next week or so, we're going to be showing South of the Border, the Oliver Stone film that just recently played at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign. While we have you here on public service announcements, we want to just talk about why we think it's important that we have pledge drives twice a year. Well, the main reason is because we have no corporate advertising. And because of that, we are able to have shows like the World Labor Hour, News from Neptune, Higher Ground, and also the wide and diverse variety of music shows that we have on the air. None of this programming would exist on corporate radio stations, or television stations for that matter, but this is why we need your support. We ask for it twice a year, so please call in.
Dave.
Yes.
this is Bill.
Yes.
I want to ask you something, too. I can't remember, but what is the name of the labor program on public TV and the labor program on National Public Radio?
Good question, Bill. I didn't know there were any.
Well, that's just it.
Yes.
I mean, folks, I do know that one of our brethren, Paul Muth, likes to use the term sibling station for
public. That's incorrect. Yes.
Yeah, the public radio station down the street. You have to be very careful, and there's a difference between community stations and public stations. For example, those public stations are generally owned by universities. Owned and operated by universities.
And underwritten by corporate money.
Well, yes, plus government money, state mm-hmm. money, and mm. so on, your tax money, so on and so forth. And they are beholden to various interests. And I tell you, man, I remember back in 94, the last time there was a big Republican shift to Republicans, and you could really tell the difference on National Public Radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the commentaries, more conservative commentaries, and you could tell people were scared there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's important to keep your community media. But besides that, you would probably not hear this, which is from Monthly Review magazine, a Marxist publication, quarterly publication, I believe it's quarterly. And it's called Freedom Restored. Quote, we've come to take our country back. And this is by Paul Street.
Okay.
I don't know if any of you know of Paul Street. He is a...
he wrote The Emperor's New Clothes about Obama's election.
Correct. I believe he has been in town.
Yes, he was here about a year ago.
And he's a Marxist intellectual. And, oh my God, he's a professor. He's probably polluting young people's minds with Marxist ideas.
He got a kick out of our mutual friend from Decatur.
Mike
Griffin, yes. When Mike Griffin characterized the statement, he mentioned, we didn't elect a black president for the president of the United States. We elected a green president.
Nah.
It's all about money. And he quoted him and such.
The wrong kind of green. Well, anyway, this is a take he has on the last election. Quote, the Republican and Tea Party counter-revolution is on the march. Faced with a major voter rebellion against its hard socialist agenda yesterday, the Marxist-Leninist United States President Barack Obama has met with Tea Party icons Sarah Palin, Rand Paul, Glenn Beck, and FreedomWorks chief Dick Armey. Dick Armey before he hits you. Anyway, Obama has agreed to significantly roll back the radical proletarian revolution he initiated in late 2008 and early 2009. According to Beck on Fox News after the meeting, quote, the great evil radicals Karl Marx, V.I. Lenin, and Woodrow Wilson are rolling in their graves. We are tossing Das Kapital back into Boston Harbor where it belongs. John Birch died for your sins, Barack Hussein Obama. This is one free market nation under God. Unquote. Obama's radical Marxist experiment has been defeated. Obama will rescind his November 7, 2009 executive order that collectivized the means of production and distribution and placed them under the direction of elected workers' councils. United States military detachments will no longer engage in the expropriation of capitalist wealth and property in service to, quote, the common good and the working classes, unquote. Private ownership of core economic institutions and their operation for investor profit will be restored at once. Obama will dismantle the sprawling Green Jobs Public Works program, his, quote, technocrats of workers' eco-revolution, unquote, created with assistance from Cuban advisors to provide remunerative and socially useful work for tens of thousands of unemployed auto workers in Michigan and Ohio. And here's a quote from the next House Speaker of the House, John Boehner. Those workers will take up their personal responsibility to prosper and thrive through the free market system of our founding fathers granted Americans. This, added Boehner, whatever his name is the greatest country the world has ever seen. Oh, no, wait a minute. And he went on to say, or they will return to their rightful positions as fast food workers, curb scavengers, and beggars. This is the greatest country the world has ever seen. We should never forget that, unquote. And then the article goes on, on health and healthcare and everything else. Dr. Che Guevara's picture will be torn down from its current place at the entrance of the federal.
What a parody. Now, we got to let our listeners know, in case you didn't catch on to this, this is a total sarcasm.
I mean, the Martians have not invaded the Earth.
Yes.
There are no Marxists in the federal government at this time as we know it.
Yeah.
And, Paul Street, and it was really good. He says on Facebook, he's one of my Facebook buds.
Uh-huh.
He says that when he gets into writing something like this, it just flows.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to think.
Yeah, we want to do a little election analysis and commentary here a little bit, coming right up here real quick.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Oh, you have something recorded?
Well, but basically I wanted to tell anybody that please call in at 359-9338 to pledge your support for Labor Radio on Community Radio on WEFT, and any pledge would be acceptable, but it helps keep us on the air. And Bill, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, I wanted to something I think we should get more into maybe sometimes is the idea that labor is all over the world. Maybe we're not covering enough world things. I think sometimes, for example, even in Palestine and Israel, there are labor things going on.
Oh, indeed.
But this here is a press release from the Communist Party of India (Maoist Central Committee), and actually, the Communist Party is much larger in India than in most countries, and I believe they actually control the province of Kerala. But anyway, this October 31st, Halloween, opposed firmly Barack Obama's visit to India, who is the gang leader of U.S. imperialism, the number one enemy of the world people, raised the slogan in one voice, Obama, go back, loudly throughout the country. That's sort of a sub-headline.
Okay. that was a long one.
Yeah. U.S. President Barack Obama will be coming to our country on November 6th. The comprador rulers of India are busy laying red carpet to welcome him and trying to beautify Mumbai and Delhi. This is a great insult to the democracy-loving, peace-loving, and patriotic people of our country. U.S. imperialism, which has been plundering the poor countries across the world, suppressing the oppressed nationalities, pushing the notorious thugs and dictators into the power, bullying those countries who wouldn't cooperate, looting oil, minerals, and all other natural wealth and resources, and for this going to any extent, is the number one enemy of the world people. Its leader, Barack Obama, is such a person whom the entire humanity must hate. Come on, tell us how you feel, Indian communists. Whoa. Man, well, I that's something I've missed for decades is the old Maoist rhetoric.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I love those press releases out of China that were running dog lackey imperialist, stuff. I loved it, man.
Yeah, it's funny though.
Now everything's sweet, smiley, happy.
Well, yeah, now everything is. what is China really? I mean, it seems like it has the worst of both systems: capitalism and communism. You know, the authoritarianism of communism and the dog-eat-dog, brutal, conditions of capitalism, So, that's quite an interesting contrast of India and China. But anyway, yes, please call. You're not going to hear anything like this
okay.
on corporate
well,
radio.
Here's another one. All right. Now, this is actually a large book that comes out yearly.
Okay.
Called The State of Working America. And it's put out by the Economic Policy Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And they have just finished writing the latest one. And anyway, here's a little preview, income equality in dollars and cents. And the gap in income growth between the richest and poorest American families is staggering, as data to be published January on EPI's State of Working America website. And it's just EPI.org, folks. Remember that, EPI. This is a very, really valuable website. The chart from the forthcoming SWA website shows the concentration of can you all see that graph? Okay.
Sure, yeah.
Income growth at the top of the income. Okay. Between 1979 and 2005, households at the bottom fifth of the income scale have seen an average inflation-adjusted growth of just $200.
In real terms.
Yes. That is one-fifth, 20%. Of the American population, a rather significant number of people.
Yes.
I don't know how many millions, tens of millions that is.
About 60 million, roughly.
60 million, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, about the population of your run-of-the-mill Western European nation.
Yeah.
Okay. Who can get like 10 million people out to protest things, and we can't get anything. All right. But anyway, and that's an increase of $200 over the entire 26-year period.
Wow.
By contrast, a small number of households at the top 1% of the income scale saw an average income growth of almost $6 million. That's the top 0.1%.
One-tenth of 1%.
One-tenth of 1%, folks.
Okay.
And there you go. And, where's our trickle down? If they made all of that money, how come it's not falling into my pocket?
They've created leak-proof wallets.
apparently so, man, or I got a really good umbrella.
Well, that trickle down is actually, I think, a form of urination as opposed to fertilization. But
but here's the interesting part. We all loved the Back to the Future 1950s and the 60s and into the 70s.
Even the 80s now.
Yeah, these latest patterns of extremely uneven income growth stand in stark contrast to the period between 1947 and 1973, when income growth was distributed roughly equally across income classes, with the poorest 20% of families seeing income growth at least as fast as the richest 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think are two major differences between that period of time and the period of time since 1973?
Well, the main thing is with the Reagan Revolution. I mean, not to say it didn't start somewhat under Carter. But it's basically this whole deregulation, export of jobs with corporate trade treaties, and the list goes on. No, PATCO, the decertification of the air traffic controller.
Right. Well, I was thinking of really two specific things.
Okay.
I mean, and that is, you know, during that period, 1947 to 1973, yeah. had 35% union density.
Oh, I see. What you're saying is what was then.
Yeah,
that presented that as opposed to what
right,
happened
I'm
to
sorry
that.
Okay. if I didn't, didn't yeah, state yeah, that okay. clearly. And
absolutely, Bill.
The income tax system, as well as the trade. The trade didn't really come until a little bit later, but it started back then.
Well, there was always trade. It was just a matter of how it was done.
Right.
But
I really think it was the income tax plus the unions.
Absolutely.
And that has been the hugest, you know, redistribution of wealth in probably world history.
Yeah, and what preceded that was, of course, the union activism that was born in actual, you know, poverty and desperation during the 1930s. After the stock market, you know, went into the Great Depression. If it hadn't been for those unions, I mean, we're talking, let's say, the year 1934, and crime rate, 1934, the year alone, saw three general strikes in three major cities in this country, plus textile strikes, plus other strikes, plus a crime rave of the rural bank robbers like Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde and stuff. This country was on the verge of collapse.
Yeah, what do we get? Tea Party.
Well, that's a media fabrication for the most part, which, you know, a lot of people have talked about.
I just wanted to comment that one of the most important things that Reagan took away from the United States was an organization called the Comprehensive Employment Training Act.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, everybody said, oh, it's socialist.
Well, a lot of people made fun of that.
Train somebody on the job.
Yeah. And they got a very reduced rate, the employers did, for that program. I mean, they got subsidized. The worker didn't lose out on it, but they got made up for it with tax dollars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would love to see these things more or less across, you know, like. You know, you do look back to the 30s, and you did it, and you had things like you had the government subsidizing artists.
I
mean, really subsidizing them as keeping them alive.
James Baldwin.
Well, the great photographers of that time.
Yes.
You know, everybody remembers Dorothea Lange.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, not Ansel Adams. I don't think he was that much part of it. I'm thinking more of like Dorothea Lange.
And yeah, Dorothea Lange.
Some people
yeah.
like that that were really known for their WPA.
Yeah, her.
Also filmmakers. Great documentaries like the Plow That Broke the Plains, The River.
Mm-hmm.
Many great works of art were created due to the WPA. You know, besides all these buildings that we use right now, it wouldn't surprise me that the IMC, that post office, it wouldn't surprise me if that was built in the 30s.
It was built earlier, but the expansion was built in the 30s.
You know,
the
things
front part
like
was
that.
Built in 1914, I believe.
Yeah, and see, this kind of comes up to something that I was told you to remember. Pushing on a string. Okay? One of the big events of this week is the quantitative easing.
Oh, yes.
Done by the Federal Reserve. Yeah. Folks, the Federal Reserve has dropped interest rates, you know, to huge lows. I mean, they're practically paying banks to take money. And I'm still getting raped on my credit card rates. Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, it was like these people, they were just throwing it at me, you know,
uh-huh.
real low interest rates. Now they're getting really low interest rates from the Fed, but boy, they sure don't offer them like they used to. And there's another one too. You know, business isn't expanding, but the Fed has done this quantitative easing this week on top of the really low interest rates and whatever else
they've
done.
Which basically means they're buying bonds. Some
right. What they're doing
worth,
is over the next 8 months, they're buying $600 billion dollars in treasury bonds back, and with money that they created. I mean, I'd love to be the person that gets to type the number in and hit return, man. It's like, bing, I just made $6 billion exist. That's all it is.
Yes.
It's a ledger somewhere on some computer, and they hit return, and it's like that person just created $600 billion at that time. I mean, it's just amazing. But the thing is, they keep giving money to banks, and it's pushing on a string because it's just the banks are just holding it. And one of the reasons why the banks are holding it, you know, they're not
They're speculating with it.
Right. And
and this is why gas prices are high. Did you see what gas went up?
Yeah.
I mean, 267, I think it was Wednesday, to 293.
But,
and this is because these banks, all these money they want to invest, they're basically going into the commodities
right.
markets.
And it's
going
to be something to create another bubble somewhere. But the thing is, we can't be pushing on this string. You can't push on a string. All you can do with a string and get anything done is pull on it.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So that means you got to start at the other end and pull the other direction, which, and that's the whole thing. It doesn't matter how much money a bank, all the banks have, and how much profit all the corporations have made by cutting their employees or whatever, because the only thing that pulls on that string is consumer demand.
Yes, and money in people's pockets to buy things, absolutely.
And besides this Federal Reserve thing, one of Obama's big deals is giving all these tax breaks to small businesses. Like, you're going to give some piddly tax break to a small business for them to take on a responsibility that's worth tens of thousands of dollars a year, which is even a part-time, low-paid employee? I don't think so. And why would they do that if they don't have enough business to need another employee?
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. You need the consumer demand so that these stores have to hire people. Unfortunately, when it comes to the products, you're still just getting people in China hired.
Yeah.
But at least, on the very least, you need to pull on that string with some consumer demand and maybe start bringing back this business and changing some other laws.
Yeah, and the whole green
and rebuilding this economy and country and our industrial base, even if it is slowly. But you just can't do it by throwing money at people who are already. That's it. It's always throw money at the problem. Oh, you want to fix education by throwing money at the problem. You want to fix poverty by throwing. Yeah, what do you? How do you expect to fix poverty? It's throwing money, but. You don't fix the economy by throwing money to rich people.
Exactly. Exactly.
You got to give them a reason to hire people. So what you need to do, basically, is raise taxes on rich people, take that money, use it in direct government spending. If nobody wants to make solar collectors in the private sector or wind generators, or I don't care what it is we need that's green, the government does it.
Mm-hmm.
The government says, hey, GM, we gave you billions and billions of dollars. You open that factory in Flint back up, and you start making wind generators or mm-hmm. whatever, or trains, high-speed trains. And the government starts doing it. The government goes to the car companies and says, look, we want you to design electric vehicles to replace all the vehicles that we use right now. And they guarantee that they will order so many of those vehicles per year. And I'll tell you what, we will have affordable electric vehicles.
Yeah, that's absolutely
That is
true.
Just this whole, it's all, I mean, I am just freaked out by the average person I talk to. I was talking to a guy, this guy's an engineer. He's worked for the state of Illinois for probably 20 years at least. I think he's in his 40s. I have a slight acquaintance with him. He knows. Actually, he asked me about doing this radio show because I was working on a job around him years and years ago. And he just said something about getting the government off the people.
Oh, and, yeah. Okay. How about let's do away with the drug laws. Let's
well,
do away with
I mean,
the prostitutes.
Like that.
That's getting government on the backs of the people.
Well, here's getting government
but
off.
But has that happened? No, it's just gotten worse.
Let's get
seatbelt laws.
No, let's get the government off the backs of the contractors and get rid of the engineers that make them make the roads right. You know? I mean, that's. Dave. I am just. And this is an intelligent person.
Yeah, but they're brainwashed. They're brainwashed by the corporate media, Bill, and that's why it's important for you to tune in and listen to shows like this and others on community radio station, because you won't hear these views on corporate stations, I guarantee you.
And
you can help by calling 359-9338. Yes, Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. And
I don't want to stop you here. You're on a great roll.
Well, be like my friend Ted and start calling into WDWS about this stuff, I guess, too. That's something I don't do. I don't get into
the opposition
media and call in.
All if you can do it with a bunch of friends, it could be fun from different phones. Okay, Bill, that was just absolutely excellent. We're going to play a little bit of I got a new CD here from Tom Morello and Boots Riley.
Woo!
the Street Sweeper Social Club. We're going to play a track or so in here, and we are going to come back and talk some more about many of these great subjects that you will only hear on WFT and other community stations. And please help us out with a pledge by calling 359-9338. Any amount is appreciated, and that's 359-9338.
It's 3 o'clock, time to get out of school and think. Somewhere in the world it's 5 p.m. and quitting time means it's time to drink. Somewhere in the world it's 8 o'clock, let's get fly, man, and go to the gig. But somewhere in the world it's midnight and the gorillas just shot two pigs. Somebody needs to bottle this adrenaline, throw that the middle fence, stomping through your suburbs like coke, meth, and Ritalin. Street lights and little sins, we fight for little yen. Despite the bitter end and ignite carcinogens, this is a little shot, I can't be stopped. A lot of fuck you pay me, little fuck the cops, cause them parasites will suck your wife and bankrupt your block, chuck you overseas to buck the block. And in the gallows of San Quentin, the officials were smitten by the smooth suave way which my initials were written. So they paid no attention at the scribble transmission. Read, I'ma get out of here, pray I don't get ammunition, come on. Somewhere in the world it's 3 o'clock, time to get out of school and think. Somewhere in the world it's 5 p.m. and quitting time means it's time to drink. Somewhere in the world it's 8 o'clock, let's get fly, man, and go to the gig. But somewhere in the world it's midnight and the gorillas just shot two pigs. Come on and come on with it. Sometimes the night falls just so you can't see the scars. This force between the stars is dialogue, the stolen DVD players and VCRs. I know a corner, if you say cocaine, they claim that you taking the Lord's name in vain. I came to spit flames until the shit changed, until we switch games, the streets drown in pain. Now, y'all might just drink and fuck to this. Let's knuckle up and deconstruct the shit. I'ma show you what they dysfunction is. They need some nickel-plated acupuncturists, violent vulturists, let's get tumultuous and bring a multitude to where they lunching is. Somewhere in the world it's 3 o'clock, time to get out of school and think. Somewhere in the world it's 5 p.m. and quitting time means it's time to drink. Somewhere in the world it's 8 o'clock, let's get fly, man, and go to the gig. But somewhere in the world it's midnight and the gorillas just shot two pigs. Come on and come on with it.
Got a new kind of square dance rap. Don't talk smack, flash my gat. I'm finna spit and hold my dick and heat shit up like a thermostat. Grab your partner by the chaps, give your partner a pimp slap to symbolize the ghetto trap. Step to the right, give three claps. Kids jam packed in tenement shacks. Ain't shit cooking on the stove but crack. This is the Baptist hell be gat, cause Boss is a kleptomaniac. The 2x2, promenade, duck from a B1 bomber raid. Ain't but the plans on summer made. Banks get paid on petro trade. Circulate, dozy dope. How much cash could a OZ go? Till all the fair and all head bears. My skin is black, my star is red. FBI coming round the outside. Which one of us finna die tonight? Is we finna fight over crumbs to buy? Or make a whole motherfucking world ignite?
and I still walk straighter than even me. 5 million ways to hope, choose one. Consider this game to go, lose some. Stockbrokers pace the flow and do some. Stay with Leggio and Uber. Hey man, fuck them federalities.
I'm at home. Okay, we're back, and that was a few previews of Street Sweeper Social Club, Tom Morello and Boots Riley, and songs you heard were, parts of the songs you heard were Somewhere in the World, It's Midnight, Promenade, and Mega Blast. We're going to be bringing some more of these to you in the future, but our technical expert advisor, Bob Plesney, is going to have to be doing a little remixing on this, a little editing. But anyway... Yes, indeed. But anyway, I'd get back with you. By the way, Tom Morello is a former member of the band Rage Against the Machine. And it seemed like a lot of times they played at various events like the Democratic National Convention out in Los Angeles. There was, a police riot broke out for some reason. It always got the police mad for some reason.
Following in the footsteps of the MC5, who was the only band to play at Grant Park during the 1968 Democratic National Convention.
Oh, good historical parallel there. Yes, indeed.
And, kick out the jams.
Well, anyway, going back to the elections, I mean, this is always the problem here. It's like, it seems like, what was really gained? Definitely nothing. What was really lost?
Not much. I wish the Senate.
Well, you know, my big pain, on the only pain I had, two losses, Russ Feingold from the U.S. Senate out of Wisconsin. He was one of the few. He was the only member of the Senate who voted against the Patriot Act.
Exactly.
He voted against all these corporate trade treaties like NAFTA. And you know what? Unfortunately, I mean, and he was, I don't know how many years he was in the Senate, 15, close to 20 maybe, or?
Over 18.
Over 18.
Oh, really? Okay. It didn't seem that long. You didn't seem that old.
But, you know, that's the sorry thing about this is his opponent, his Republican opponent.
He bought the seat, man.
Poured $10 million of his own money plus all sorts of ungodly amount of corporate contributions. And he beat this great representative who really represented the people. Well, I mean, you know, it's just amazing.
No, a senator. I mean, representative senator. But I mean, this is a senator. It's a bigger.
That's true. But, you know.
It's a really bad law. In the Senate,
indeed.
I do remember in his concession speech, he did say something about 2012.
Oh, that's good.
You know, maybe
that's
he might try and come back. I hope so. And I think I know who you're going to say also.
Yes, and
Alan Grayson.
Alan Grayson from Florida, the Orlando area. Man, they had a party almost on Fox News when he conceded the other night. I mean, he was hated by the right-wingers because he started – he did a lot of interesting stuff. He did a couple things with Ron Paul from the Republican side about auditing the Federal Reserve. And he started a website called something about the 40,000 dead every year that – die as a result of not having health care. And he tried to amend the phony Obama health care bill. I should say the Obama phony health care reform bill to where anybody could buy into Medicare. But, of course, that was even, crushed, within the Democratic Party itself, not just unless he didn't even get to the floor to vote on. But, yeah, Grayson was fiery, too. I mean, I liked him. You know, some people thought he was, was a little bit eccentric,
But he just came out with the truth and just said it that way and wasn't no niceties about it, like he said about the Republican health care plans. Here's the Republican health care plan. Hurry up and die.
Hurry up and die,
because they had no,
don't get sick, hurry up and die,
I was listening to him yesterday, I believe, somewhere, I can't remember that, but I mean, he goes, they just had no health care plans at all.
Yeah, they would wave a piece of paper with their health care plan, and were blank sheets of paper,
I remember seeing Tim Johnson do that once, it was at your union hall, at the Carpenters Hall back, he was running against Mike Frericks.
You were there taking photos, weren't you? Okay.
And well, I wasn't, maybe I was, I can't remember, but anyway, he had like this big stack of paper, and he'd talk about something and have, I know all this, he didn't know anything. And so anyway, I was talking to him after, and I said one thing was, and this was like right when 703 went into trusteeship, my union local went into trusteeship due to corruption, anti-democratic practices. And Tim Johnson had mentioned at this debate that he had been the lawyer for Local 703 for a while. And I said to him, I go, well, Tim, I think at this point you might not want to mention that. And then he goes, then he gave me like this big stack of paper he had. He goes, here, take this. And all it was all
blind.
No, it was all what it was all legislation that helped business out.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He, you know, his claim, you know, so he was taking the usual Republican claim that if, you know, trickle down again, if you help business, you will help labor. You know, and it's just
Well, one thing's for certain about these last elections is, you know, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, the corporate media, the propaganda they, you know, spin out there trying to say, oh, this is a rejection of Obamacare.
You have to go to the right. You have to go to the right.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, how many times do you have to turn to the right before you realize it's not the way to go? You know, I mean, look at percentages and look at the left end of your party and see how many people are on the left end of your party and see how many people that are conservative that are never going to vote for you anyway. Well, I mean, they would have won. They wouldn't have won all that if they would have had the same vote that they had in 2008, but they didn't have the same vote because they kept going to the right. They kept giving in. They wasted that whole year. People are begging for work.
2 years,
people need
almost.
Jobs before yes. you need health insurance. You usually get your health insurance from a job, and you guys spend a whole year on this health insurance thing instead of cranking the economy back up using your political capital to get it done.
Not only that, but the health care so-called reform was nothing but a giveaway to the health insurance companies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is, the Republicans say, see, the majority of the American people have rejected Obamacare and socialism. Well, yeah, you poll people, what do you think of the Obama health care plan? Well, of course there's like 70% or more people that hate it, but ask them the reason why. That's the key difference. It's not because of big government interference in our lives, because it wasn't the solution to the problem. The only solution to the problem in this country with health care is Medicare for all. That's the only solution.
Something
what every other civilized, industrialized democracy in the world has, and even some third world countries. I mean, if that isn't shameful.
Non-democracies, I think, maybe,
even.
Too.
Okay, you know, that's even more shameful. Sure. Yes, yeah. But I mean, what's really interesting, too, Bill, is that's what happened, is people are upset because they didn't come through on their promises. The Obama and all the other Democrats on down the line. Now, what's interesting, though, is the conservative, quote-unquote conservative Democrats, what I like to call corporate, especially corporate Democrats, they lost over half of the seats they ran for re-election, where the progressive Democrats, they held on to 95% of their seats.
Well, but I think Alan Grayson said it was 20.
He was the only.
He said 23 out of 24 progressive Democrats won.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and he was the one who didn't. And unfortunately, he was the most visible.
Yes.
Which makes it look like.